This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Tamburino stand. Here we are with the Yeovil Town manager. Are you happy today? You're going to win the game?
Yes, we are. 4-0, mate.
4-0 Yeovil today. Cheers, manager. Here we are, just outside the stadium. Here's a picture of when Yeovil won the Champions League.
Good memories.
Won the Europa League in that one. Big club, you know.
Usually every time he finished a song, he'd get on a payphone wherever he was in the country and call me and wake me up. And so, like, he'd lay the phone down and start playing his guitar, you know? And that's how I heard this song the first time. I always thought this was a real pretty one. It's called My Old Man.
Jonathan Codger, he's outwitted Warren. Jonathan Codger, and at the far post, it's fired home by Conor Hourihan. But Aston Villa looking to avoid unwanted headlines tonight.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. And the good news is I've actually found a friend to join me.
Ooh, friend.
Chris Budd, welcome back. It's been a while.
Thank you. It's been a long and stressful summer, but we're back in the game.
It has actually been that long. We did record a show a few weeks ago that never materialised because dodgy mics.
Lack of enthusiasm.
Yeah, no, I played it back because I thought I'd put this out as a bonus. And the first thing I had to do was like speed it up and increase the pitch because we were so kind of dour.
This was, put in context, this is when Villa were amidst a financial meltdown and it looked like Henry Lansbury was going to be the captain for this forthcoming season. So
I think we're on the verge of administration at this point.
Exactly. Well, what other clue do you need more than Henry Lansbury becoming the captain? That basically translates to liquidation. Sorry, apologies to any Henry Lansbury fans out there, or indeed Henry Lansbury himself.
So let's start off with 3 points. Number one, apparently, so everybody keeps saying, this is the best Villa start to the season since 1962. We've hardly played anybody, have we?
That's bonkers, isn't it, that it's taken us that many years to win 3 games at the start of the season.
Yeah, and bear in mind, obviously one of them was a League Cup, and the Villa that I used to support never used to enter the League Cup at this such a stage.
Even the second round was considered
Even the second round was frowned upon because one was expecting to be in Europe, so automatically you would be entering at the third round stage. But in terms of the league, the first time that Villa have won their opening 2 games since 1999, I mean, what's been going wrong for the last 19 years?
Lack of John Gregory?
A lot of people talk about the Martin O'Neill years as the 666 years, as I like to call them, as some kind of, you know, great days. But obviously he didn't even manage to win his first 2 games.
No, and from what I read, I'm sure Bruce has got a much bigger win percentage than him already, which is staggering.
Yeah, but he is obviously, he's on a safe wicket in the Championship.
Ah, yes.
And this is indeed something that we do tend to forget. But I will start to get more excited. I mean, if we can, let's say, beat Ipswich
And then we've got two winnable home games, haven't we? We've got Brentford and then Reading?
I think Brentford are obviously, back-to-back. All those games, I mean, I would fancy us to beat Ipswich over actually beating Brentford at home, because we've played Brentford obviously four times since we've been down in the Championship and failed to beat them once, and occasionally been played off the park by them. So
and they've looked pretty good as well, you know. They've started well. They play really
Good quite like their away kit, actually. It's the same Adidas template as the Blues, but it's got this 70s brown and orange look to it. So we'll talk about kits now, shall we? The Villa kits, all three of them now. I thought the third kit, there was obviously a lot of hype about it. I mean, obviously these shirt cycles, it's all a marketing thing to... You raise, especially with social media, you raise the hype and then obviously sell a few off the back of that. But this third kit, normally a third kit, if there's a reason, apart from making, you know, a few extra bucks, is because the two kits potentially won't work against a certain colour shirt. But this one's too really close to the home shirt, really. It doesn't offer that much.
Well, I get why you'd have a dark kit. And I was, you know, a big fan of that 95-96 navy one, which may be what it was styled on a bit. But it kind of just looks like a training top. I mean, it's quite cool and futuristic, but it doesn't... Is it needed?
No,
really?
It's got that same clarity purple as the Under Armour.
Yeah, it's at the pink end of claret, should we say.
The home kit is quite retro. Obviously, it's a direct spin-off of the circa 84 kit home shirt. And this, I suppose, is a bit more, fashionable, or let's say more modern, to use a better word.
Yeah. The home kit's smart, isn't it? Aren't they 180% up as
Yeah, there was some
kits, which is crazy. They're out of stock.
There was
some
crazy figure, like 700% up on last year, but I didn't know what the context of that 700% actually was.
I don't know. I mean, to sell that many more is, you know, fair play. I suppose over the summer, everybody's been clutching at straws for good news. So the fact that we can get excited about a nylon shirt at £55/£50 is pretty desperate.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when they were hyping it in the first place, they were talking about how this one's for the fans, it's all about the fans, blah, blah, blah. And you're just thinking, well, the only thing that's about the fans is if they price it. And it was actually £55 it came out at, which was more than last year's shirt. And you thought, yeah, that's really for the fans.
Yeah. One thing I will give them props for, though, which is very cool, is that you can obviously personalise your shirt, can't you? And that's I think that's a really nice touch.
I was just about to mitigate the price thing. I mean, I mentioned it on social media, and as did a few other people, and then the next day the club actually dropped a fiver off it, so they realised that probably wasn't the greatest idea. I mean, obviously, you know, you're thinking, well, there's a captive market out there, X amount will all buy the shirt, so, you know, stick an extra fiver on it because we'll get it back in our times of need.
Yeah, and to be fair, the sort of the leisure wear and the training stuff is a lot cheaper, isn't it, than the Under Armour?
Yeah, I think Under Armour just bizarrely took the piss. I don't understand how they come to such prices, because some of them are like bizarre. We're talking like, I mean, I don't know the specific prices, but you'd look at like a training top, like a hoodie or something, it'd be like £80, where you would consider like £50 to be expensive for such a thing.
Yeah, I know I think they call them the stadium jackets, don't they? That they walk out in. This year's ones are really smart, and they're about £50 as well. They're really affordable compared to the, you know, astronomical amounts that Under Armour were charging. So
Chris Budd, £50 to him is nothing. Sorry.
It makes no difference, because either way I won't
be
buying a shirt.
That's why it's affordable, because I actually bought a shirt off eBay, but it was a New York Jets American football shirt. I've supported New York Jets for like since the 80s, late 80s. And I've never had a shirt, I don't buy replica shirts, but this was like beautiful mint condition. It was almost like custom built. It was like extra long, my size, excellent condition. And then you get it, and it's all good, but when you put it on, you just feel like, to finish off the look, you need a can of beer in your hand. Now contrast that to the football kit
and go tailgating.
Exactly. But you know, like a big hamburger in one hand, a bit, it just feels like that's the natural transition. But contrast that to football shirts. It's always funny when you go to pre-season games, and especially the Under Armour was quite a figure-hugging kit. And you go to the games, and you know, there's a certain type of fan that enjoys a beer, shall we say, or a beer or 10. And there they are, guts hanging out from these tight-fitting shirts. And you're just thinking, yeah, at least the American football teams are actually thinking about their fans and their demographic when they create their shirts. Because most people are, like, sending messages to the club going, yeah, so what's the fit on these? When you say extra large, do I need three yeah. sizes up? Or
yeah, is a slim line going to be too slim for me?
It's just quite a funny little side culture, the whole the shirt sizing thing. Anyway, let's move on. I mentioned going to the Lego Discovery Center. I spoke about this when we recorded the podcast show, mainly because that's what I did before I met you. But the main reason to mention this, as you probably have seen on the My Old Man Said social media channels, is there is a Villa Park there, and there's actually a room, a big, big room. I mean, this is for kids generally. They don't let adults in unless they have a kid with them. And one big room is a recreation of Birmingham with all the main things built as Lego. For example, you know, Edgbaston, the university, the town centre, mailbox, Moore Street Station.
Rotunda and all that. And the Rotunda.
Yeah. And I think it took about nine months to recreate Birmingham in Lego. And they have a Villa Park, which is pretty impressive, as you've probably seen from the pictures. And it's actually, you can actually score a goal at Villa Park and a commentary comes up. But one thing they don't really advertise is it's a half and half stadium. And the other half is, what do they call it now?
The Trillion Dollar, whatever it's, Trillion Trophy
Stadium. I mean,
that's
the most ironic naming of a stadium ever. But yeah, I could still call it St. Andrews.
Well, unless it was going to be sponsored by Always Full.
I don't think Villa fans have really worked hard enough on that Trillion Trophy stadium, because it's just like an open goal for gags, really, and we haven't really...
I mean, I think what we're doing is we're building up to it come May, because if all goes wrong, it's a tap-in, that one, isn't it?
But actually, the away trip's a tap-in, I mean, for like flags and stuff. But anyway, if you've got kids, the Lego Discovery Centre near the Sea Life Centre, I think it's quite opposite it, there's a giant Lego giraffe outside of it, but definitely worth checking out to see. And there's loads of things for kids to do, but the Birmingham thing, I think it's more like for adults almost, the Birmingham thing, because it is actually pretty interesting to see. Then maybe you might even see a little Lego figure outside of the Holt End that was modeled on yourself. Me,
I think I was the one with my head in the hands. That must have been me.
Yeah, I think I'm the one that's building a gallows pole in the car park. I'm just glad they didn't have a Lego Wembley there, because I'd have just started crying, I think, if I saw that.
I mean, that'd be, you know, a really bad use of Lego clackers as well, wouldn't it?
Lego clappers.
Let alone prawn sandwiches.
Just want a quick shout out to the My Old Man Said patrons. And I just want to thank Ross Guild, Mark Bucknell, and also thanks for the email all the way from Australia, Mark. Thank you for those kind words. Christian Lawson... Statham, he's got a double barrel name, so he must play for the Villa under 23s. And also Matthew James, thank you very much. We've got over 100 patrons, so that's a fantastic foundation. But please do sign up if you want to support the website and the show. Go to myoldmansaid.com and click on patron on the menu bar. Thank you very much. All right, let's get on to events on the pitch. We'll start off with the Oval, since obviously it's happened. But, you know, we'll talk about Villa in the context of the season so far, the Hull away game and the Wigan at home. First thing I wanted to see was Axel Zanzibi at centre-back. And obviously Bruce reads My Old Man Said, so he's obviously obliged. I mean, but sorry, Bruce came out saying that he was going to obviously shuffle the pack. Did he make six changes for that Wigan game and then obviously made a load of changes for the Oval game, and saying that he was learning from last season because maybe he was a bit too stubborn playing the same players? But this whole learning from last season... Doesn't he remember what happened when Jedinak played at centre-back last season? It seemed a bit of a strange one, but what do you think of Axel's performance against Yeovil? I mean, it was almost like a pre-season behind-closed-door game that they'd set up just to test him at centre-back.
Yeah. No, I think he's, he's clearly a really good athlete. Yeah. You know, he's strong and he's quite quick. It's hard to gauge him, isn't it? Because I don't know if he'll actually play with Elphick through the season. Yeah. You'd guess he won't, unless he decides to magically play a three at the back or something. So if it's with Chester, I think he'll take a little bit of time to develop a partnership with him. But He's certainly the centre-back who's got a bit more pace than Chester and probably more than Terry as well last year. He kind of gets caught out, but
he
recovers, though,
doesn't he?
When he gets caught out, he's got the recovery. And there was the one where he cleared off the line, which I think he reads the game well. I think, as Bruce has said, he's just going to need games. And there's a few of the guys in the team and in the squad that they just need game time. But I think he's a good player.
So in terms of, let's say, the next games, if you throw in Jedinak, the idea of Jedinak as a centre-back out the window, would you go Chester, Elphick? And just to speak in Elphick's corner, when he came in for Terry last season, I thought he did a decent job, and I couldn't understand why Bruce didn't just keep him in there instead of like messing around with Jedinak. Or do you go and develop the Chester and Axel combination?
I mean, I'm happy with either, really. When it comes down to it, I don't really care as long as whoever it is, as long as they form a partnership, because obviously Chester's going to play. If he's fit, he plays, so it's going to be one or the other. I'd rather it was those two over Jedinak.
That's called sitting on the fence. If you had to make the decision,
I'd play Twanzabe, just because I think whenever I've seen Elphick and Chester, I mean, I saw them obviously the whole game, because neither of them are that quick, they've both got to be on it with their positioning and reading of the game. And between them, you know, they haven't played that many games since the start of the sort of the Di Matteo reign, really. So whoever plays with Chester, it's almost like a new partnership anyway, especially when you factor in having a new goalkeeper.
Sure. I mean, while we're on the subject of the defence, if Axel slips in at centre-back, do you play Hutton over Delatt, or do you put Delatt at right-back and then Hutton over the left and boot out Taylor?
To me, it actually you end up moving further forward, and it's how you set up your right winger. Because if Elmo plays at right wing, I'd play Delatt with him. I think you've got a good balance on that side, and they're both quick. At this stage, I'd probably play Hutton over Taylor at left back, now that we've got McGinn in, because you've got the natural left footer, or Hourihan, who can go out that way. I mean, you discussed it before. Twanzabe as a fullback doesn't offer you much going forward. I don't think Taylor offers you much going forward either. He tends to kind of get to the halfway line and panic.
I mean, just occasionally get in there. There's no real kind of cutting edge.
No. I mean, one thing I really like about Hutton on either side is when the game opens up for him, he'll run into the space and he'll really get you up the field quickly, which is something that Taylor won't do. Delatt, to be fair, is deceivingly quick. I know we saw him against West Ham, and he came on and he's sharp. So I think he might slot in at right back. Hutton will probably slot in at left back, and then it will depend on whether El Mohammadi plays either as a right sort of winger or if he's going to bring somebody in, as to whether it's Elmo or Delatt.
Quite interesting that James Bree couldn't even get in the team for the Yeovil game, which isn't a good sign.
No, and then when he came off the bench, his first pass rolled out for a throw-in. I think he's one of those who just pretty desperately needs game time, which I don't think he's going to get at Villa. It's going to probably have to be on loan.
Most fans didn't know who Joe Bryan was from Bristol City, and then obviously got a bit pissed off when he did his U-turn. He could be just another James Bree, because James Bree was hyped as like one of the best young English defenders and was playing, you know, in the Barnsley first team. And Bruce had seen him play three times before he signed him. And, you know, managers, well, normally they'll go and watch it one or two times at this kind of level, if at all. Because remember, in the interview with Nayland, the goalkeeper, the Norwegian goalkeeper, he said he hadn't actually spoken to Bruce yet.
I didn't realise that. I think with Bree, it's one of those things where he saw a young lad in probably a very average side who was one of the standout players. And then to come to Villa, where all of a sudden there's expectation on him and the pressure isn't to stay in the division, it's to get out of the division. And even maybe training with much better players every day, he possibly got found out and his confidence
has cleared. Because one of the things it says on the tin of Bree is that he's good going forward. And
I mean, I've seen little bits,
flashes of it, but nothing that kind of convinces you that he should be given a run. But I think going back to that balance of McGinn, obviously Green getting back in obviously gives you a bit more balance as well, having a natural left footer on that side. So there is more compensation, shall we say, for Hutton playing out there.
Yeah, and also Green, again, he'll get you further up the pitch. It's that having natural pace in wide
areas. Yeah, I mean, looking back at that Yeovil game, Bruce was right when he said we got away with that, because that game could have gone any which way.
I mean, we were poor, let's be honest. We were, for long periods, especially at the back, we just looked all over the place. It looked like a makeshift team, which is exactly what it was. You know, we had little moments. Obviously, Green had a great effort and Grealish had a good effort. We got into good positions, but we just lacked any sort of fluidity on the ball. And it was that, you know, scrappy and convincing win that me and you had been joking about for the last 18 months under Bruce, really.
I mean, a lot of people have said, well, the way forward is to play youngsters, but it's all good on social media seeing Hepburn Murphy score a hat trick, you know, under 23s when they flash those scores up. But when you actually go and see and watch the reality of it, it's a different thing. And I think this was another example of when Hepburn Murphy comes up against men. I don't think it's not like when you used to watch Michael Owen come through the ranks when he was 16, 17, he had like raw pace to and as sharp as a whippet. Yeah. And he in the first 2 yards, he would be out of sight or had latched on and the ball was in the net. Hepburn Murphy, when the ball's at his feet and the defender's on his shoulder, doesn't have that raw pace to burn him off. People normally stay with him or, you know, even dispossess him. And I'm not convinced there.
No, I think, you know, you look at a lot of these sort of like the wonder kid players, for lack of a better word, when they come into these teams, like an Owen's a great example, then those guys are normally stepping into quite an established team who have a pattern of play, and they, you know, like Owen, for example, would have slotted into that side and they'd have known exactly how to get the best out of Owen. We traditionally, especially under Bruce, tactically don't get the best out of what we've got. So you look, you know, you had Hepburn Murphy, who I don't even think 6 foot, up against two big guys, and they're still lumping it up. And he's playing with his back to goal. Now, neither Hepburn Murphy, Codger, Hogan. We've only really got Keenan Davis, who wants to play with his back to goal, yet we still persist on playing with one up front and play with their back to goal, which surely we'd be better, as was proven with the goal. Actually, when you get it in behind them and let Codger run at people, that's where the goal came from.
If Bruce is going to persist on playing this way, you might as well make Davis the captain and just let him go for it. Yeah. Because as you said, he's the only forward who can actually play that way. And I mean, Doyle Hayes, for example, is a tidy player, but he would serve a team. For example, I don't know, that the Liverpool team we were talking about, Doyle Hayes in a good team would slot in and keep it tidy, keep the ball moving, and he would look even, you know, better than he is, if you know what I mean. It's an easier wicket.
I think so, yeah. I think, yeah, for someone like him, and we've discussed this before, that there's a couple of them who are like that as well, who are very technically good on the ball, but you look at him compared to the other players around him, he's just not physically developed yet. He's one of those who you think, go and get a year on loan, you know, build yourself up a little bit and get confident in, you know, in competitive games. And he could be a good player, but it's at this point for where Villa are at, and you look at the players we've got in midfield, you can't take the risk.
Grealish also has problems because he's not playing in a team that, let's say, is a good team and he can just slot in. He has to make the running and he has to, a lot of it's on his shoulders, even at this stage. That's how desperate Bruce is. It's not really like, oh, Grealish, he is like a young Messi, we will build a team around him. It's almost like, well, what, I haven't got any other options. He's the only one who can do it on his own.
Yeah, I mean, the Wigan home game was a good example of that, where the amount of times he was picking the ball up off the centre-backs, and you think, you want Grealish 20, 30 yards further up the field where he can influence the game. Now, that role is for a Whelan or a Bjarnason, who I thought was actually really poor against Wigan.
Apart from in injury time.
Yeah, he had a good final time. 4 minutes and got himself out of jail, didn't he? But, you know, he's got that in his game. And I think he'll be I think Bruce roughly knows the midfield he wants to play. If everyone's fit, I think he knows what he wants to play now, unless something miraculous comes off in the low.
In my solo podcast that I did, good first day of listenership, actually. It was broke the record. Maybe I've been held back by all you guys. I don't know. Sorry, I was just thinking out loud there.
Probably it's our slow, brummy delivery, isn't it?
I think on the last podcast, I was going out on the limb a bit, just based on what I saw, and I got good vibrations from how McGinn and Grealish could potentially link up, and they were, their understanding and was growing as the game actually went on. And you see those two together suddenly can change the way that Villa play into a certain extent and actually be a bit more progressive. And they can potentially unlock Green and make him, let's say, more effective. And also Hogan, if Hogan ever comes back and plays for Villa again. McGinn was, you know, always running, always offering himself. And it took Grealish in that game, McGinn was alongside him, but he was playing like a longer ball. But then in the second half, he started to trust him a bit more,
McGinn's a good foil for him, isn't he? I think, I mean, I used the word all through the game and spoke to you afterwards, and it was the word snappy.
Snap, what a happy sound. Snap is the happiest sound I've found. You may clap, rap, tap, slap, but snap makes the world go round.
To describe McGinn, he's got that bit of bite in his game that Grealish isn't necessarily going to be a ball winner. I don't think Hourihan wants to be, but he can kind of, he'll put a shift in. McGinn really likes all the physical stuff. For someone who's not that big, And then when he gets on the ball, he will just go pop, 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 and he'll knock the passes around.
I insist that pop's the sound. The best is missed unless pop's around. You can't stop hopping, the cereal's popping. Pop makes the world go round.
He wants to keep the ball, or he'll look up and run into, if there's space to run into, he'll go. And that's what he gives you, which maybe Hourihane isn't going to carry the ball. And Grealish can, but he's obviously not. He's not a lightning quick player. He's sort of, you know, Grealish sort of glides around the field. McGinn flaps, by his own admission, you know, with his wanky, like, wanky elbows.
Oh, he's wanky.
Yeah, wanky, wanky elbows, whatever they are.
So you're saying he runs like he's wanking.
Frantically.
But, sorry, we're trying to introduce a bit more smut into the show while Dan...
Bit of blue. Bit of blue for the dads.
While Dan is on holiday, I think Hourihane now is a bit more focused because he's placed in the first 11s under threat and he's making vital contributions so far. Obviously, he scored the winner against Yeovil and then set up, came on, you know, only for a matter of minutes. And
I think that's important, isn't it? At any level, is you want contributions from the bench, or that's the whole point of Villa having a squad and this whole thing of Bruce saying, oh, he's supposedly learnt from his mistakes. In that last year, we had the same, it was generally the same guys were impacting games. You know, you had Adoma or Hourihane, Grealish in the second half of the season. It was the same, your key performers were the same key performers. We didn't have many people come in and then stay in the team. Like Bjarnason came off the bench on numerous occasions, did well, didn't keep his place in the team.
What I was saying about Hourihane, I was alluding to the fact that McGinn is now keeping him on his toes. So he obviously has to come on and prove himself. Well, in the past, there's just been a bit, you know, this people come on and it's just pretty much the same effort that seems to happen. But I think Hourihane, after having a season as being the main man and now being under threat, that's what's kind of motivated him now. And that's good for Villa.
And the thing with McGinn is he's one of those guys who you can tell he'll get the team and the fans going. There was one moment where I think it was the Wigan right back had the ball and he legged it from the centre circle, nailed him into touch. That's the sort of stuff that gets the fans on side, which is one thing that you'd never get that out of someone like Onoma last season.
Yeah.
As far as like a like-for-like bit of business, spending a little bit of money to get McGinn compared to Onoma is a fantastic bit of business.
It's something we haven't had, that snap, crackle and pop.
Yeah, for a while.
I was reading about Celtic getting knocked out the Champions League, and a team loses a game and there's a whole autopsy of what's gone wrong, and they're mentioning Celtic didn't really buy anybody or get anybody in, and obviously McGinn was on their list, and you know they looked likely to get him when obviously Villa were in their financial meltdown. But I think it was Pat Nevin made a little jibe saying they spent £2 million on disco lights for Parkhead for the Champions League, you know, to like flash them around in the build-up. And so essentially, for just over £2 million, we got, I think, potentially would be a top man for Celtic. And for £2 million, they got a load of disco lights, which they can't use now because
they've still got to qualify for the Europa League, haven't they? So it could be that they don't even get European football.
Although, Chris, I've got to admit, I am looking forward to the days when Villa can just splash £2 million on some disco lights for Villa Park for the Champions League.
Absolutely.
For European nights.
With our newly redeveloped North Stand.
Yeah.
With the disco ball on the roof.
Maybe when they do that North Stand expansion, I mean, probably not in our lifetimes, but maybe maybe Champions League disco lights are part of the plans. They're actually inbuilt, so they don't have to add them in later.
I would hope so.
One can only hope.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hey, any other observations from the start?
I think it's just question marks, isn't it? The goalkeepers, that's a big question mark for starters.
Oh, yeah, sorry, we've just skipped loads of things there. Let's start. I mean, let's just have a look at the makeup. I mean, we've pretty much dealt with the defence, so just go back one position to the goalkeeper situation. And I think Villa fans are having a few sleepless nights. I mean, I was mentioning on a previous podcast with Dan that Sorensen used to give me sleepless nights. And so what about these two guys? I mean, let's start with the Yeovil game first.
I mean, Moreira, he had one of the weirdest debuts.
Andre Moreira on his debut for Aston Villa, looking to try and keep Fisher out. It's Fisher! Moreira with the save! A big moment on his debut! He rescues Aston Villa!
If you read the match report, you'd say clean sheet, saved a penalty. What a great debut. But if you watch the game, he looked awful. Like, he didn't command his box and flapping at everything.
He had no conviction. Every time he came out, it was like a half-hearted punch. He went and then pulled back. I joked on Twitter that for a goalkeeper who kept a clean sheet and saved a penalty, that was one of the worst debuts I've ever seen. And if that's him on an off day, then he'll never concede a goal while he plays for Villa. Because maybe the guy's just blessed with luck. You know, a lot of people obviously said, oh, David De Gea, he was shocking in his early game, and Sam Johnson. But Sam Johnson, his first game was against Spurs, and he played all right, and he knew, obviously, keepers have nerves or whatever, but Johnson's only problem was his distribution and his kicking. Now, this guy looked like a bad continental keeper. I mean, it's early days, you know, you want to see him, and we'll see him again, obviously, in the cup. But thank God he saved that penalty, because if they got knocked out...
I mean, it was an awful penalty, let's have that right as well. It was a bloody dreadful penalty.
You can only save what comes your way, but... And he could have dived the other way just for kicks.
Or not at all.
Not at all, yeah. Or just dived over it, which I'd have put my money on up until that point. I found it a strange one. When he came in first, you thought, okay, he's there to challenge Steer. But then when Orjan Nalan came in, you realise that Nalan's coming in, or Nylan was coming in to be number one or battle with Steer. But then when Steer went out on loan, you just thought that was obviously planned from the start, because why bring in this Portuguese?
I mean,
kid?
Yeah, why would you loan a third choice goalkeeper? You wouldn't, would you? I don't see the point. If you know, when you've got Burn and you've got Sarkic there,
because Steers
for sort of your reserve team,
proved himself to be, let's say at this level, an okay keeper. I mean, he was good for Huddersfield.
I mean, I wouldn't go as far as say sad to see him leave, but I thought he was more than deserving of a shot. You know, I get why you'd have brought in another goalkeeper to give him, you know, competition. But I think his kicking, if anything, he's actually better than Johnson's. I think he's a good shot stopper. I think from what Bruce's interviews have said, it's just that his lack of physical presence one thing, and his fitness record is appalling. Yeah.
I mean, I was thinking because these guys had literally walked through the door that they'd have kept Steer just for another week and had him play against Wigan. And I don't know about the cup game. Obviously, a cup game is a good chance to try out any keeper. But then I thought to myself, well, you know, the best way to try out keepers is, you know, throw them in the deep end straight away.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the two new lads, I think you can't judge them really until you know that, well, that's going to be the back four or the back five if they go that way. And then it's, you know, they'll get settled.
And I think that Nylan suffered against Wigan because a big crowd at Villa Park is obviously looking for the confidence, and he's hasn't got a settled centre-back partnership in front of him. And then suddenly Jedinak sends him a hospital ball, which obviously leads to Fulham's equaliser. And he looked a bit flappy in the second half as well. And one of my talents is I can tell a keeper just by looking at him if he's any good or not. And when I looked at him, I thought... Oh, fuck.
Is it the haircut?
It's that. It's the gloves. It's that kind
of... The black on black.
Yeah. The vibes aren't...
Villa's record with Scandinavian goalkeepers isn't the best. if we're talking about Sorensen, Enkelman, and Schmeichel at the end of his career.
I was
career.
Just about to say, do not mention the E word, but somebody on Twitter actually said, this is another Enkelman. Well, actually, I think the Moreira, he was referring as the new Enkelman.
I'd agree
with
that.
You can kind of see that. They have a similar... I think he needs to get in the gym a bit just to give himself a bit... Buff himself up just so he's a bit more confident coming out, because he was hesitating pretty much every ball that he came for. And there was a... Yeah. There was a problem just awaiting every time he came out.
In both of their defence, I would actually say hesitancy, as you've said, was the thing that's kind of been right throughout the team in the first few games. It's that lack of the cohesion that's not quite there yet. You think once he gets a settled centre-back pairing, and every week in training, you'd like to think he'll grow into his role. So, you know, I'll sort of leave it until maybe start of October to judge more fairly.
Oh yeah, I mean, there's obviously, you can't judge anybody on one game. You can get obviously insights.
Yeah, I mean, Bruce says he's very highly regarded and people have been after him for a long time.
That's true, but when we signed John McGinn, almost unanimous outpouring of, you know, from Hibs fans, obviously, especially saying how great he is. In terms of Nyland, Norwegians, they were like a little bit of column A, little bit of column B. He kind of polarized them.
Well, we shall see.
This kind of makes it exciting anyway. Actually watching a game, knowing there's a potential car crash waiting to happen, it just adds a little layer to it.
It's great for the opposition.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I mean, Villa always give you a chance at the best of times. And if you were Yeovil, you think you'd missed a trick because he was there for the taking.
Yeah, no, they didn't really actually test him out. Even if they didn't think about it before the game, after like, I don't know, say the opening 10 minutes, latest at half time, you just say shoot on sight.
Yeah, and get it in there.
Put it on that 6-yard line and let's see what happens. And it'll be interesting to see if anybody starts to target the keepers in the league. Nayland, knowing that he's had a bit of a shaky first game, so, I mean, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But he actually picked the ball out of his net against Wigan more times than he actually had shots to save. So I think Ipswich away will be a lot, and Brentford, when they visit Villa Park, will be a lot more of a test to see exactly what his qualities are. So, you know, we don't want to get too cynical about the keepers at this stage, but it's something that obviously people have got their eyes on now, and it's kind of interesting. So that's the keeper, that's the defence, midfield we've kind of covered. The Villa put a picture out at Yeovil. It was Grealish, Chester giving it a thumbs up, and McGinn, the three of them sitting together. And that, to me, those are the three players I'm completely comfortable about in the Villa team.
Yeah, I think what he's starting to get is a spine.
Yeah, and if Villa are in the Premier League, I think those three players, I wouldn't have a problem with them at all. And, you know, those are three players... I think Ron Atkinson used to have a saying, you can bet your mortgage on. And those are three players I'm completely comfortable with. And probably the only
they're your consistent sort of players, aren't they, every week? Unfortunately, you don't see a match winner up front at the moment. But
which brings us on to the Codger situation. Codger getting a bit of flack from
somewhat
the
harshly,
terraces.
Somewhat fairly. You know, I think he's coming back from a long spell of injuries.
Yeah.
Not just last season's one, you know, the season before that.
But Villa, I mean, is this Villa fans kind of shooting themselves in the foot, because they really should be trying to get behind him a bit more? And obviously he was the one who unlocked the door in the Yeovil game, and I thought for somebody who's, and you know, I'll hold my hand up, I'll criticize him for his lack of keeping his head up and his lack of vision, a bit of over-selfishness at times. I mean, strikers are meant to be selfish, but, you know, he's sometimes OTT for the detriment of the actual team. But that was sublime. I mean, that was a standard of quality above what Yeovil...
Well, that was the difference in the game, wasn't it? The guys we brought off the bench compared to what they had raised the bar very highly. I mean, I don't mind, you know, Codger sort of being selfish as long as he impacts the game in other ways as well. You know, he's fair game if he's in the, you know, if he's in and around the 18-yard box, have a go at goal, because someone has to be positive. The big thing I'd say in Codger's defence is he doesn't want to play up against two centre backs with his back to goal and have the ball pumped up to him. You know, he'll put a shift in, and he's a big guy, so if you play into feet, he'll hold it up. But he's not a target man player. You know, he wants to be brought in. He wants to bring other players into play, and I think there's some of that is his, you know, his demeanour. He comes when things aren't going his way, he kind of looks a bit strappy. Yeah. The other side of that is the players around him have got to realise they've got to be playing 10, 15 yards further up the pitch to actually support the guy. Because one of the big things against Wigan was, you know, they were quite a sizable team. You aren't going to win the first ball every time, but you make sure you go in and get the second. And Villa weren't getting the second ball, yeah. You know. Bjarnason, and in fact, they were all guilty of it at times. You know, you've got to have people playing off him. It was the same as last year. You know, you felt sorry for Hogan when he was up there on his own, and Codger when he was up there, and even Graben at times last year. When teams find Villa out, they just isolate the front man. And all of a sudden, the plan falls apart.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, we've seen this in three games so far, you know, regardless of who was in the team. And after every game, Bruce has been, you know, bemoaning the performance. But we've seen this for, what is it now, over a season and a half. And suddenly you think, well, actually, Bruce, the book has to stop with you. Because in terms of a style of play, there is none.
There's no Villa engine.
It was almost like mythology, the Villa engine. It never actually existed. It was mythical. And he's going into his third season now, Bruce, and really it still seems to be game to game. What he says after the game, any downsides are things that should have been rectified. And here we are, we still don't know how to get strikers into the game. Hogan, most of the time, looked like a lost sheep, and now Codger's struggling to have any impact because doesn't seem to be any rhyme or method to
I mean, the frustrating thing is about him. You look at a lot of our players going forward, and I think, you know, if you give Hogan service, he'll score goals. If you put Codger in goal scoring positions, he'll score goals. The same with, you know, if you get Grealish in and around the penalty area, he's going to hit the target. Green wants to do that. McGinn, from the videos we've seen, loves to do that. Horahan's got a great shot. You know, we've, on paper, we've got goals in the team. So the book, again, stops at Bruce, because if you're not getting the best out of those players, there's no point in constantly having this overhaul of new players, and they look great on videos, their stats are brilliant. Because McCormack had great stats, and, you know, other players we've brought in were great on paper, but when you actually build them into a unit, it doesn't quite work.
Yeah, I mean, McCormack, I mean, we've said this many, many times on the show, but it was hard to see how he was going to fit in and how they were going to, let's say, open the door to all those goals he scored at other teams. I mean, the good thing about, like, Benteke, when he played, he was just like, you just get the ball to Benteke, full stop.
He was a bully, wasn't he? He was what you're looking for from Keenan Davis.
Take care of the rest. You know, he had the team on his shoulders. We were actually a one-man team, to use that cliche, at that time. And it seems just a waste of him playing at Palace and Liverpool. Still, that was the last time I was excited about a Villa player, to be honest with you, in terms of somebody who was delivering big time.
He was a genuine match winner, wasn't he? For three seasons, he was a genuine match winner.
My catchphrase with him was always, if you got Benteke in your team, you got a chance of beating anybody. And, you know, we saw that against Liverpool, more than once.
We were struggling, you know, he was pretty much the difference, probably two of the seasons he was there, between us going down or not.
They always say that you need good strikers to get you out of this division, and you know, Mitrovic proved to be the difference for five months
he was there, and
was the difference that fired Fulham out of nowhere to promotion. Bruce has hinted that there's potentially one or two, if he manages to do it, loans coming in. I mean, people talk about Tammy Abraham. The first time that was mentioned was I wrote a transfer rap, and it was just an educated guess. I just said Villa, we'd probably be looking to bring a striker in on loan, blah, blah, blah. There was that West Ham guy that was mentioned in the press. Then I said, and, you know, probably as in these circumstances, they always have a list of, you know, four or five players, and Tammy Abraham is up more than likely on that list after proving himself in the Championship. That was first thing in the morning. Suddenly in the afternoon, the Birmingham Mail run a piece saying, oh, Tammy Abraham on the list. And you read that article and there's no evidence in there. And then straight after, suddenly it's everywhere, you know, Daily Mail.
Transfer tittle-tattle, as Bruce
does. So I'm thinking, wow, is it just because I've mentioned it? And it is, let's say it's common sense. You would ring up, if you were a football manager in the Championship, to see if Abraham's was available, because obviously he's been on loan, and that's how it works. You know, these big clubs stockpile players and, you know, loan them out to obviously give them games. I mean, if he came, that would be an interesting potential, but it's where do you draw the line? If you bring in, and loans are more than likely the, you know, the young potential stars of the big teams, where do you draw the line where you say, Codger, I think you should sit on the bench now and let's give this young guy a go. If Hogan gets fit, are they going to bring in a lone guy that's going to make such a drastic difference or be such a good name that they would drop Hogan and Codger? Because as soon as they're fit, as we saw with Davis, Davis suddenly drops to the bench when one of those are fit, even though that Davis potentially is a better option, for example, when we've played teams away.
We've got, four sort of what you'd call first-team strikers with Davis, Hogan,
Codger,
and then you've got Hepburn Murphy as well. So not all of them can feature every week. So if you're bringing in Tammy Abraham or whoever, it is surely because you're bringing them in to improve you and therefore play. I don't see the merit in bringing somebody in on loan to just be part of a squad. Abraham, can he score goals? Yes, I think he's basically a like-for-like replacement for someone like Codger. He's in the kind of mould of him and Graben.
But I
did he have a good year last year? No. So it's, will he get a Premier League move? Maybe. Will anyone take a punt on him?
Because Graben came in on loan to cover Codger and ended up being the best striker we had. So that's, you know, that's obviously why he was starting it towards the end, which doesn't really say much about the other guys. Graben was the kind of player who looked for the ball as well, and he'd find himself out wide a lot. But this is my concern, is are Villa or can Villa, will McGinn and Grealish together make a difference and influence the style of play where they're a bit further up in the field, especially Grealish, as we kind of mentioned, that suddenly a striker is actually all he's having to do at the end of the day is just put it away like the fox in the box, because that's what Hogan would prefer to do, or Hogan would like to be put through, shoulder.
Codger's the same, really. Codger wants to be in the box and finishing. There's no reason why we can't. Again, it's a, you know, if you've got the wide players right, be it Green or Elmo, or if Snodgrass or whoever comes in, you're going to need wide men who can actually get forward. It's having that dynamism, you know, to have a really solid front five to actually go after teams.
Yeah, because I'm hoping Green will stretch teams a bit more, because I mean, last season we didn't really have out and out wingers. I mean, Snodgrass and Adoma were cutting in and scoring, and Adoma was scoring a lot because when it was coming down on the right flank, he was coming in from the left and essentially turning into another centre forward. And maybe that the forwards are suffering because we're not getting in behind the team and getting a ball across where, you know, a centre forward can obviously just, you know, put it away. They're having to come.
Yeah,
they're having to come outside the 18-yard box and kind of look for the ball because they're kind of isolated there. I mean, there's so many times Codger picks up a ball and he's suddenly got four players around him,
doesn't he? You can tell he gets frustrated. He either drifts out to the left, and there's moments definitely in the Wigan game where you just think, just get in the box. If you hold your position, you know, I know the touch count for these guys is low, but he wants to get involved and that's admirable. But if he holds his position and lets everyone else get into the game, you know, he has to be somewhat disciplined otherwise, because if you take him out of that attack, you lose any kind of focal point.
You know, for example, Hogan holds his position a bit more and he doesn't see the ball because he's holding his position. This is the problem. It's up to Bruce to sort out how we attack. Although saying that, against Wigan, we always looked like we were going to score. So I don't
Same
know
as Hull. I mean, we had four shots at goal and scored three of them. We maybe had five or six against Wigan.
Well, McGinn,
I think he was on target.
McGinn had four shots just on his own. So that suggests there was a little bit of whatever, however we fucked it up against Wigan at the back, we were going to have a go at least. I mean, granted, our equaliser, I mean, not only was it an own goal, but the assist, it was assisted by a Wigan player as well. I don't know, we'll see. I mean, the games, I think Ipswich, Brentford are a little level above the teams we've been playing. But I mean, looking at the Championship as a whole so far, I mean, obviously, when a season starts off, you look at who's the favourites, and it's always lazy bookies, journalism, punditry, whatever you want to label it. But it's normally the teams that got relegated from the Premier League. But, you know, I didn't see the likes of Sunderland and Middlesbrough last season exactly pulling up trees.
Sunderland were awful, weren't they? Let's be honest. Stoke haven't started
I mean, looking at this, Middlesbrough have been fancied, but, you know, they've lost their main threat, Adama Traore, who I think we got, was it 3 million for because of the three and a half, probably? There was initially talks of all these installments Wolves would be paying, but then it seemed to be a clean deal, so it looked more than likely that we were going to get our 20%. But anyway, Middlesbrough, I think they will be solid. I think playoffs, but I don't see them running away with the league, for example, like Wolves did. But Leeds are the team that, it's no coincidence, they wiped the floor with Stoke and Derby. I mean, I fancied them to beat Derby because Derby were woeful in their first game. But Stoke, you don't know if, I mean, they were the favourites at the start of the season.
I think Stoke will grow into it, won't they? I think they won't necessarily start well. The Baggies haven't started well either, but you would expect come, you know, February, March time, they'll be there or thereabouts.
But have you seen Leeds? I mean, now Marcelo...
They're lively going forward, aren't they? They put their foot down and they go. And they play really
good
football.
On like triple training sessions over pre-season. He's been working their asses, so they play this kind of high-pressing... High tempo game, and in his past, his teams always start well because obviously they're pre-season training. But then I think A, they kind of burn themselves out, and B, it's hard for the players to mentally sustain that intensity throughout a whole season. So they've tended to fade. And Leeds, I mean, they had a good start last season. I think they were undefeated after about seven games and at the top, and then they obviously slipped back to mid-table this time. It's pretty much the same team.
Yeah, they've obviously got... They've brought Barry Douglas in, didn't they, from the Wolves, which is probably a shrewd bit of business.
Liam Cooper, the captain, and a lot of... There's a big difference in Calvin Phillips, who's a kind of DM who gets things going, and he's... And it's quite interesting that he's... Marcelo has just come in, and he's just... With the tools he's already got, has built something completely dynamically different from last season. Well, I don't want to get at Bruce, but Bruce is always talking about we need 2-3 more players. We need 4 more. And I think the squad's pretty good at the moment.
There's definitely depth there. I think there's no point in bringing in players unless you can improve what you've got on the starting lineup. I don't see the point in just...
Yeah, I think you should concentrate more on what we've just been talking about, you know, getting the attack going and getting in identities. And, you know, you should be expecting Kodjia to score because we create so many chances. But at the moment...
He's not getting chances. It's not, you know, I think he had a couple of sort of half chances, you'd call them. There was probably one that was a better chance against Wigan, but there was certainly... He hasn't missed a sitter because he hasn't had any.
As I said before, surrounded by about 4 players, and then he'll beat a couple of them and then shoot, and it'll rebound off the arse of one of the others, and everybody gets frustrated with him. But he's not having an easy life at the moment, and that's more down to Bruce than it is to him. I quite liked some of the stories coming out from the Leeds about Marcelo Bielsa, where he asked a member of the staff how much the tickets were for Leeds games. And then he worked out how long an average fan would have to work to afford a ticket. So then he settled on 3 hours, and then he made the players pick up litter for 3 hours just so they understood but how much football meant to supporters and what supporters actually had to do to afford a ticket. These characters, I love it when they come in and they completely transform the culture of a team. I mean, I also follow Lincoln City because I'm from there, and Danny Crowley has come in with his brother, and they just roots and branch examination, got into the community, starting inviting people for free to having open training sessions every week, and really brought the club closer to the community, and it transformed because suddenly you've got suddenly they were getting 9 or 8 thousand season ticket holders and getting gates to 12,000 when back in the day, when I lived there, they'd be looking
to get
2,500.
Supporters want to feel like they're a part movement, of something moving forward. Yeah, movement going forward, and they go, they always use that cliche of, people believe in the project. Like, everyone at Fulham believed in the Jokanović thing or what was going on at Wolves last year. It's very easy to do that when you're top of the league. But, Fulham came from much further back, but they believed this is the way to do it.
Yeah,
and it was
same with the
right.
Wolves. I mean, all Leeds need to do now is win a few more games, and their fans will start to really buy into this Argentinian madman. But he went to the Great Yorkshire Show. He was allegedly seen with a DVD of Kez. People who know their film will know the significance of that. Just to show that he's actually getting into the Yorkshire culture.
I wonder if he's watched the Damned United yet.
He might resign.
That might change his view.
Hopefully before they have to play Villa. I mean, the only other team that has made my eyebrows go up a little is Notts Forest spending.
Yeah, nowhere, relatively. Yeah, where's this money all of a sudden come from?
They just snapped up Lewis Graban, so they obviously sold him a dream and obviously did a bit of Mendes magic as well. But you've got to obviously bed it down and gel it
Forest, they could be a force in the second half of the season, and they might be looking at next season realistically, but they won't be in the trouble they were in this year. You know, I remember we played them in the second half of the season last year, and they were awful. They, they'd started reasonably well to begin with and faded very quickly, but now they could have a bit of staying power.
Yeah, I mean, just based on their spending, I'm sure their supporters are thinking, well, we're going for the playoffs.
I mean, there'll be a lot
season.
Of teams that will, won't there? There's no, from on the face of it, you wouldn't say there's a runaway leader or a really sort of dominant team this year. It could be a really competitive season with probably eight teams who'll all expect to be there.
And that's why I think if Villa and Bruce gets his shit together, that this can be our year. Because on the positive side, you've got a manager, love him or hate him, he's been with his team. This will be his third actual season. You know, I'm not counting the exact how long he's been there. And he's got a bulk of his squad that's been with him. And let's not forget, he brought six players in the first January window. So he knows his team, and you would hope that he could only get better. I mean, he's admitted to making mistakes last season, so hopefully he understands his team and he can progress, because I think if he can't get promoted this season, I think that's the last we hear from him.
You would think so, wouldn't you? I mean, I think there were times in the second half of the year, you know, with everything going on in his private life at home with his parents and certain things at Villa, where he just, you know, you could tell he was mentally fatigued. And I'd imagine over the summer he was probably thinking, oh God, this is not getting any better. So, you know, since the new ownership's come in, all of a sudden he's got his, you know, he's kept his best players. He's got a little bit of money to spend and the scope to actually go and get into the loan market. I think he'll be possibly feeling this is a real opportunity here that he might not have expected to have.
And Villa know the championship now. They understand it now. As we said earlier on, these teams that get relegated automatically expected to be promoted straight away. But there is a reality, is that there is the grind of potentially having three games in a week. And
I mean, all three teams that went up last year had been down there a while, and none of those teams last year that went up had parachute payments. I think, was it Fulham? It had taken them 4 years, I think it was, since they went down. Jokanović had been there for two and got them firing. You know, Wolves had obviously gone all the way down to League One and turned it round. And Cardiff had a, you know, really experienced manager and managed to get the job.
Because one thing people do forget is these players that are, if they don't get a move out of the club that's got relegated, the season before they were playing in the Premier League. Now, there's a good chance that in their contract they also have a clause that where their wages get reduced if they get relegated.
Yeah.
So suddenly their motivation, they're playing in this fucking hard-ass league where they've got to play and go to, let's say, not the most glamorous places in this country. They're getting paid less and it's actually harder work. So their motivation, unless they're, you know, of a certain character, that's why these teams struggle when they get relegated, because you've got to man up. And Villa, would have started to do that, and they showed that last season.
The teams that have come down, they've come down to this league for a reason, because they didn't man. You know, I mean, I remember watching Stoke numerous occasions last year, and they just rolled over against teams. I mean, they were awful. Same as Swansea. You know, the Baggies towards the end of the season, they'd kind of turned it round under you know, Big Dave. Whether or not he's going to have the tactical know-how to, you know, navigate a 46 game season is another matter. Yeah. But they would expect to be there or thereabouts. But there's no guarantees that they will be.
Yeah, no, I completely forgot about the Baggies. I think they're the main threat of the teams that went down.
But they've kept the bulk of their players. You know, Swansea got raided on deadline day. They had a dreadful deadline day. I think they've only got, from what I read, I think they've got one senior centre back.
Right.
As things stand, you know, they lost their lead striker last year. Obviously, Tammy Abraham left. Bearing in mind, he had an awful year last year in the Premier League out on loan. Stoke have obviously managed to keep people like Butland, Joe Allen, got some experienced players, and the Baggies have got
dodgy manager though.
Very much so.
Yeah, but the Baggies also have the feel good factor of their manager because of what he did at the tail end of last season. So if he gets a good start in the first 10 games, then
I think they'll expect to be sort of in and amongst it. I don't know if the expectation is necessarily to be, you know, top of the table and running away with things, but they'll expect to be challenging, as will Bruce, as will a number of managers.
Are you feeling positive now? Well, I always say that compared to where we were, let's say, 3 weeks ago,
vastly ahead of where we thought we were going to be.
What could possibly go wrong? But no, I'm just happy that I've got three players now in the Villa team I can hang my hat on, so to speak.
Do you know what, as well, it's nice to have, with McGinn and Grealish and a couple of other guys, at least you know you're going to get some entertainment. Yeah. and someone, you know, takes some enjoyment from watching.
Somebody
as well.
Who's up for the fight. I mean, the one thing, well, I was going to say the one thing about Snodgrass, but, you know, Snodgrass had many attributes. But one thing that he did offer straight away was a bit of tenacity in the midfield, you know, even though he was obviously on the right-hand side. And he had a bit more battle and grit than we had before. But now we've got it bang in the middle of the park, and this is a guy who does get around. So he does suddenly give you that energy. And
he's just he's dynamic, isn't he? I think he's... We discussed this the other day, and that there aren't that many in the Villa team who you think when they're having a really bad game, he will still put a shift in, influence the game. And you think with McGinn, he might not be doing anything going forward, but in the centre of the park, in the centre of the park, when he needs to put his foot in, he will. He's not really easy. He's going to shirk tackles, and he'll give you his all.
I mean, a lot of Hibs fans said that he never gives up. So to all those Villa fans who are leaving that Wigan game to beat the traffic, we've got McGinn now, and as you obviously, well, you didn't see because you missed it. we can win games in the dying stages now, so it's worth all sticking around.
Twice we've come from behind to win a game. I think we only did that twice in the whole of last season, didn't we?
I think that's the note to finish on, actually. Stick around.
Yeah, get your money's worth.
Get your money's worth.
You're paying enough for it.
Yeah, it takes you 3 hours of litter picking to remember to pay for that ticket. Well, according to the Leeds United science, anyway.
Maybe Leeds will offer Gabby a contract doing litter picking duty.
Yeah, now we're getting silly. I think it's time now to say goodbye. Actually, we started recording this podcast in daylight, which is a first for a My Own Man Said podcast. Normally you hear wolves and owls howling and tweeting in the background. It's normally like the midnight hour. Anyway, please do support the show. We're going to bring you the show a lot more frequently now. I want to do some more location stuff, you know, more interviews and getting out and about. So please do support the show if you are not already by becoming a My Own Man Said patron, as I said at the top of the show. Go to myownmansaid.com and click on the patrons option on the menu bar. Also, if you're listening on iTunes, please do give it a review with 5 stars, and then you can say whatever you want. Slag off Dan Rogers if you want. He's a mercurial talent. We miss him so much. We need him back. Just imagine 3-way podcasts like it used to.
Wow, it's the future.
Well, how it started. We had young Chad Wren who disappeared. So until the next podcast, where hopefully Steve Bruce will be a happy man in his post-match press conference, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from him.
Goodbye.
My old man said.
Snap, what a happy sound. Snap is the happiest sound I've found. You may clap, rap, tap, slap, but snap makes the world go round. Snap, crackle, pop, Rice Krispies. I say it's crackle, the crispy sound. You gotta have crackle or the clock's not wound. Geese cackle, feathers tickle, bells buckle, beets pickle, but crackle makes the world go round. Snap, crackle, pop, Rice Krispies. I insist that pop's the sound. The best is missed unless pop's around. You can't stop hopping when the cereal's popping. Pop makes the world go round. Snap, crackle, pop, Rice Krispies. Let's go!
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.